Now here is the moderator of today's program, Steve McCormick.
The current controversy on Capitol Hill began last January when President Eisenhower presented to the Congress the largest peacetime budget in our history, over $73 billion. Compiled in a massive volume of some 1,000 pages of the President's proposals for the successful operation of his program. This means you, the individual taxpayer of America, will pay 51 cents of every dollar collected to maintain this budget. Now, the principal question is, will reduction in the national budget seriously impair our security and our economy? And to resolve this, we're happy to have as our guest today on the American Forum, Senator George A. Smathers, Democrat of Florida, Senator John Sherman Cooper, Republican of Kentucky. Well, gentlemen, let's begin with this question. Do these House military cuts mean to you a reckless gamble with the nation's security? Senator Smathers?
Steve, no, it doesn't mean to me a reckless gamble with the nation's security. I think the real issue is not whether we're going to have any national defense or a strong national defense. I don't think that the issue is whether or not we're going to have even a foreign relations program or no foreign relations program. The issue is, can we have a reasonable foreign relations program and can we have a adequate national defense and still cut this budget? I think that we can cut it, and I'm prepared to try to explain it as we go along.
Well, Senator Cooper, how do you feel, sir?
I feel that it is gambling with our national security. The military budget represents about 60% of its total cost. I see nothing in the last year that has changed which would make less necessary a full and adequate defense. Certainly, we've seen what's happened in Hungary. There's been danger of war in the Middle East. Russia has exploded the hydrogen bomb again and again. It has missiles, has a great military force. And we cannot be sure that it will not be used.
Do you feel that we can be sure, Senator?
Steve, I would say this. The reason that I think this budget can be cut, this is the same budget that in January the President of the United States himself said he thought that it could be cut, and he urged the Congress as its constitutional duty to cut it. It's the same budget that Secretary Humphrey just a few weeks later said if we didn't cut it, it was going to curl the hair of the general economy of America. It's the same budget that Chairman Adams just a few weeks ago said he thought it could be cut. It's the same budget that Bill Nolan and other people on the Republican side and in this administration, Randy Burgess, the Assistant Secretary of the Treasury, told our committee just as recently as 6 weeks ago he thought it could be cut by $2 billion and there would be no great damage to national security or this government.
Let me ask Senator Cooper's opinion of your comment on that.
Well, let's get back to the question we started with. The question is whether or not a budget cut would hurt our national security. Now, my good friend George has raised a question which I think we all are in agreement upon. Everybody knows that any budget can be cut some. This budget is going to be cut perhaps a couple of billion, maybe more. The real question is, how much can you cut your military budget? And I'd like to ask my good friend George what he says about that, and then I will talk something about it.
Well, I would say this, John, that that the House Appropriations Committee, under Congressman Mahon, as he said the other morning on a program, they've spent 4 months studying this budget. They have recommended a cut of $2.5 billion, and in their report, they say that the national defense can withstand this cut and not do any great injury to our national security. And as a matter of fact, they go on to point out in it that actually there's $45 billion that is carried over from previous appropriations. $10 billion of that $45 billion is even unobligated. So if we say they're asking for $35.5 billion this year, we cut them down to $33.5 billion, but they've got $45 billion left over from the year before. It seems to me they've got plenty of room to operate in and that no great damage would be done.
Have they plenty, sir?
I think my good friend George knows that there's always unobligated balances. There's always a carryover. Because in the procurement of military supplies and the time it takes to produce them, that's inevitable. But if you reduce that too much, then you can't procure the military supplies you need. You actually cut down your defense. I could give some figures on that.
Say this, that in this particular budget, according to Senator Harry Burton, I don't know of any greater economist than Senator Burton or any greater student of this whole budget program than Senator Burton, There's $10 billion that they haven't even contracted for in any way. They haven't used that talking about we'll buy in 1959 or 1960. It's just $10 billion. And according to Senator Chavez of Mexico, who's head of the Senate Appropriations Committee on this military defense, he mentioned it just the other day in their hearings. And they apparently, the Defense Department, had no particular answer to it, except they've got an extra $10 billion. Well, the way the situation's going today, I think that they're actually got much more. They have much more money than they can practically use.
Senator Cooper, just to clear that up. I happened to look at the figures for the last four or five budget years. Every year, there's been about $10 billion unobligated, uncontracted. There's been about $30, $40 billion which has been contracted and obligated. And I say again, that's in the pipeline. Real question is about this money. Now, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Secretaries of the Military Services, the National Security Council, and the President have set up certain programs. A certain number of men in the armed forces, certain number of ships, certain number of airplanes, and a program to develop missiles and atomic research. That costs so much money. And so when you go to talking about cutting down the appropriations, what you do is to cut down the money, I mean the men, the weapons, the ships, the planes, or the atomic research.
Well, look, how much
that's a question of judgment, but our president, the people who are concerned with it, say that if you cut that down, you cut down our weapons and our men.
Steve, I just want to say this. We've got men, George Mahon and others on that committee, who have been on that appropriations committee for the military longer than this particular administration has been in office. They've been wrestling with these military budgets for years. It's the constitutional requirement of the Congress to make the appropriations for the military. It's not that of the president or even the executive branch of the government, other than to recommend. They are thoroughly familiar with this program of budgeting money for the military. They say in their report that this recommended cut of $2.5 billion will not cost one single weapon, will not cost one ship, will not cost one airplane. But they believe this cut of $2.5 billion can be brought about without any danger to the national security. And if it were going to, if I thought it were going to endanger the national security, certainly I wouldn't support it any more than anyone else.
The conflicting opinions of experts now confuse the taxpayer, and he comes up with the question, well, how much of this cutting is really sincere and how much is pure politics?
I want to speak to that once again, if I can.
All right, go ahead.
The cuts that the House proposed would simply take away from this reserve fund and use it this year. And of course, that means next year you would need the same money again. And $1 billion of the cut they proposed would cut down on maintenance and operation of our equipment and also research. Now, if you're going to test this administration's judgment, let me just say this. It started with a program of keeping balanced forces steadily. It's a different program than it had been held before. And I do not want to get too political, but George, you remember that until this year, each year, your party, and I may say some of mine, complained about the policies of the administration. They weren't spending enough. They'd cut the manpower. They'd cut the planes. They'd cut the missile.
That's right.
And last year, you forced nearly $1 billion on the administration.
Right.
And now you're taking just absolutely
that's
another
right.
course.
John, you're exactly right about that. That's what we did. And 5 years before that, in 1953, some of us objected to Secretary Wilson cutting then the Defense Department by $7 billion, and we predicted that he would have to put it back at an additional cost to the government, and he did. But the difference between 1953 and 1955 and 1957 is this. In 1957, we have many more planes than we did in 1953. In 1957, we have worked up to a defense posture which makes us much stronger than we were in 1953 or 55. And in addition to that, world conditions today don't look to me to be as bad as they were, for example, when we were having a lot of trouble in the Far East. John, I think when you were ambassador out there in India, but right below you there, when Vietnam was about to be taken and we were really having to spend a lot of money and the prospects of war were enormous.
Of course, that's the key question. Is communism still a menace? Senator, you've been ambassador throughout that area now.
One more point.
All right.
The very things that my good friend George Mathers has said, that today we're in so much better shape than we were 4 years, is a proof that the Eisenhower administration has done the job in the military, in its military program, and it's done it, and I'm willing to take its judgment today rather than these people who, during these 3 years before, said it wasn't doing it.
There are two points.
And if you cut down the money, you're going to cut the men, machines, the atomic research that we're now doing. You're going to weaken this country.
The fact of the matter is that the Congress then forced on the Eisenhower administration, or not Eisenhower so much, but Secretary Wilson at that time, the money which he didn't want but to give us the aircraft which we thought we needed. Secondly, yes, we're all grateful that we're better off today. I don't know that it results directly from the administration leadership, because on this particular matter, John, with respect to this budget, let's not forget, less than 3 months ago, the leaders of this administration said that we can cut this particular budget, and they said we can do it without any great injury. Now, the question is, do we believe them now that they've gotten excited about it, or do we believe them back in January? What I'm afraid of is that they wanted to make it look as though that the Congress, if they did not cut the budget, that the Congress was probably very loose and profligate and spending a lot of money. Then they could say, well, we said it could be cut, but you fellas didn't cut it, so the taxpayer can blame you. But when the Congress took them seriously and looked into this budget and began to cut it, then they throw their hands up in holy horror and
right,
say,
Senator,
wait a minute.
I don't agree with that. The cut that they said might be made was on the total budget. It didn't say upon the military budget. The President of the United States said, as you said, it'd be a gamble to cut the military
budget.
Well,
I want to say this one thing right there. The President of the United States said in his press conference just last week that if we had true unification, we could bring about some savings in the military establishment. Back in 1948, he said we've got to have true unification, and if we did, it'll save the taxpayer billions of dollars. And yet he admitted just last week that we did not have true unification. We find the Army, we find the Air Force, we find the Navy, each, for example, in the guided missiles program, each competing against the other, each costing the taxpayer an enormous amount of money. If we had unification, if the President would force unification, I don't mean we put all the servicemen in one uniform, but I mean unification in these basic research programs, we would save the taxpayers millions of dollars.
Dr. Cooper, well, that's, again, a debatable question. Some unification has gone forward. It has to be progressive. Perhaps more could be done. I agree with George on that. It ought to be pushed up. But that, again, gets away from the point that we're facing today, and that is whether if you cut this military budget in dollars, whether you cut down the men, whether you cut down our program of atomic research, guided missiles, and thereby hurt our defense. And I say again, I disagree with George. I think our situation is just as dangerous as it ever was. At a time when we've got a chance to make some progress, to cut our strength down is dangerous.
I would repeat, I don't want to see us lose one guided missile, one useful man, nor one airplane, nor one weapon. But, as I said, unification would save us a lot of money if we forced it. In addition to that, the Coordinator Committee, which Mr. Eisenhower appointed, a gentleman, a very able gentleman, his report, which he filed just last week, said that a practical use of the manpower in the military by adopting programs which he suggests would save $5 billion of dollars. Now, we're not going to have it. John's been in the service. I've been in the service. We've all had some experience in it. You know the military is not of its own going to eliminate this useless manpower. But if we cut this money with respect to the manpower then and sort of force them to make these savings themselves, it can be done, according to Mr. Eisenhower's own committee, and be done endangering our national security.
Mr. Wilson said yesterday that the cut that the House had made would make it impossible to carry into effect the Cordier recommendations. And I point out that in 4 years, Mr. Wilson has reduced the military forces and civilian forces by 1 million men.
Let's talk for a minute now about another very important part of the budget. Yeah. You obviously don't agree on the military section. What about foreign aid? Will the President get all he asks for in foreign aid, Senator Smathers?
Well, I don't believe that he'll get all that he asks for in foreign aid, and I'm one of those who has voted in the past for aid to Greece and Turkey and the Marshall Plan and all that sort of thing, as John has too. But I think that we must have a reassessment of our foreign aid program, and I think that the Congress has finally realized that possibly we aren't doing right in just going around giving large sums of money away all over the United States. I mean, all over the world. You remember in this Saturday just passed paper, here's a story from Mosin's wrecked U.S. Embassy. Well, we just gotten through giving them $3.5 billion for defense, $775 million for economic assistance, and then they hate America. Now, it's a little ridiculous to send Mr. Richards, a great congressman who was chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee of the House, I served under him, but to send him all over the East here recently with the large bags of money, and he had to come back home and finally say I wasn't able to give it all away.
Senator Cooper, do you agree with that?
I think George is going a little bit far there. I say with all due regard for him. I would say this, that I certainly do not think the foreign aid program in the past has been as good as it ought to be. I remember a personal thing when I came back a year ago from India. I made that statement to the appropriations committees and urged myself some changes. What now is happening? The president is coming before the Congress and offering the kind of a program that the Congress has said it wanted, a loan program. And I think it should be adopted. Incident out in Formosa is terribly unfortunate. It's going to hurt us throughout Asia. It's going to give the communist Chinese grist for their mill. But I don't think that's an argument against it. The real question is whether it's important to our security to do what we're doing there in Formosa. We may have to do a better job there.
What of India? Should India get more money, Senator? You were there as an ambassador.
That goes into another category. I think it might be worthwhile to point out what I don't think is generally known, that now the $3,800,000,000 the president asked for, $1,900,000,000 goes for military supplies to our allies. About $900,000,000 goes to what's called defense support. Again, just a pure military item. $1 billion goes to economic aid to some 40 or 50 countries over the world to help them remain free. And if we consider we're in a struggle throughout the world with Russians and communism, certainly it's important to us for these countries, 1 billion people throughout the world, to remain free. That's its purpose.
Now, Steve and John, I just want to say this, that Justice Douglas, I noticed he's traveled a great deal out in Asia. It's an area which John's familiar with, and I was pleased, as I don't, or sometimes don't agree with him, but in this particular matter, he said that he thought that the program, foreign aid program we had out there is offending some Asian nations and they're forcing them toward communism. He said he based his assumption on the theory that Asians want to keep their newly won freedom free of any strings. And Douglas pointed out that Russia has convinced Asia that the money countries would pipe the tune if direct aid is accepted. And he said this, Russia has aided the Asiatic countries with trade agreements and not direct money. Now, I think that's where we miss our bet, is that we try to force this money on these people. Apparently, we try to force it on them. We send a man around with a lot of money trying to give it away. And yet they don't appreciate it. And I think where we make our mistake is not entering into trade agreements with them, letting them know that we think highly enough of them to want to do business with them, that we accept them as equals rather than forcing some money on them. And I believe that if we adopt that kind of a program, we will get further along than we have in recent years. Now, you ask me why this budget will be cut. I'll tell you why I think it's going to be cut, because there's about $6 billion in the pipeline, which has previously been appropriated, all of which has not yet been obligated, but the president's asking for $3,800,000,000, and he's already got six of it working through the pipeline today. Some of it, as I say, not obligated. I believe the Congress can make a reasonable cut in this fund, and it should, and it can do so without endangering our foreign relations.
Again, you've got the pipeline, just like you've got for your military aid. You don't cut it off and start again. I point out again to my friend and to the television audience that the program which the president is now advancing is the kind of thing that the Congress has said it's wanted. And if it appears to some people throughout the world that our aid has strings upon it, I might say that it's true because of the requirements that have been set up by the Congress itself. For example, that every time we make something available to them, that they almost have to thank us publicly for it. I think that we'd get spontaneous thanks if we did what we had to do, and I agree thoroughly with the idea that we should move toward the loan.
Well, John, it seems to me the question is, in giving these sums without any strings, whether or not we accomplish anything for ourselves at all. Now, here's a story about Tito. He's in an interview published yesterday, Tito said last Friday he had appointed a committee to re-examine the question of whether or not to accept continuing aid from the United States. But whether or not they're going to accept it, it seems to me a sort of an affront to the American taxpayer and the people. If they don't want it, of course they don't have to take it. And we are putting ourselves in a ridiculous position asking them to take it if they don't want it.
Georgia, I can't agree with the hypothesis you've stated. I don't know of any case where the United States has run throughout the world begging people to accept money. I do not. I wonder if you do. But, and I think we go back to the point. What is the purpose of this aid? The purpose of one part of it is to give military strength, which helps ourselves.
John, I just
wanted to say... And the second is to give strength to some independent countries that if did not have that strength, they could move toward the other side of the world.
That's right. You say you don't know of any case where we've gone around trying to force it on people.
Here's I don't.
Here's a cartoon from the Washington Evening Star, and it shows Richards talking to President Eisenhower and said, $80 million unspent Middle East fund, return of the unprodigal son. And then, of course, Congressman Richards was quoted when he came back. He said, well, at least I didn't give away all of your money. But he went around to give it away. And I think that's
George,
what...
George, I don't agree with you. Give it away. The Congress, after long debate, passed the Mideast resolution. And they made available certain sums to the president to help strengthen countries in the Mideast against communist aggression. I think you voted for it. I don't
No, John,
think.
I'm happy to say I didn't vote for it.
All right, then, you're in a very consistent position. But the Congress did overwhelmingly. And as a result of that, Congressman Richards, you know well and I know, went out upon that mission. I think he's made a success. Remember Jordan a few weeks ago. The thing that I can't understand is in the last 6 months, we almost were in a war. Russia threatened the use of volunteers. We could have been in a war. We can say that this administration's policy for 4 years has given us peace, and for that reason, I'm willing to go along with it upon its program of foreign aid and upon its military defenses.
John,
you can't answer the success of the program, and our country can't answer it. That's the reason I'm supporting it.
Well, I would say this, that of course we gave to King Hussein of Jordan just as late as about 8 weeks ago $10 million, even though at that time he denied the Eisenhower Doctrine. He said, I don't want any part of it, and I will not accept any money on the basis of having to tie up with the United States. What's going to happen in the very near future, of course, is again a matter of great question. We don't know, but at the moment, things we look well, and we're grateful for that. The conditions, the reason they were so turbulent as far as 2 months ago was because Britain and France, who had been historically our allies, apparently having lost considerable confidence in us and believing that we had put too many of our own eggs in Colonel Nasser's basket and believing that Nasser was an embryonic Hitler, they took it on themselves without even notifying us to go in there and try to settle the issue. And then we took the position of making them come out. And John, you say we're better off than we ever were. We may not be. As I understand it, in England today, in France today, there is more antipathy and less regard for the United States than there has probably been in 100 years.
With a few minutes
that
left, gentlemen.
That may be true, but I say that in 4 years, this policy, the policy of building this constant military strength, which we never had before, George, we got the record of 2 years, two wars, seeing it drop to nothing. And this record of having a reasonable foreign aid program, we're at peace. And we've gotten through some very difficult situations.
And I just want to say, each time the Congress has voted this money, and each time the Congress has exercised its discretion, and each time the Congress should have done it. Now, this time the Congress is going to do it, and I believe we'll do it rightly. And I think their judgment will be sustained once again when they cut this
money. I agree. The Congress has the right and power. This is a matter of judgment.
I want to get an answer.
My judgment.
I want to get an answer to a big question with you. Well, many taxpayers are asking, how much politics is involved in this business of cutting the budget? Now, we've heard big business take on the budget for a change this year, Senator Smathers. Does this mean that the Democrats will get some financial assistance in the elections next year from big business?
I don't believe so, and I don't think, of course, it's been done with that in mind at all. I think it's just this, that we are ourselves in a very dangerous fiscal position here in the United States. We have a $275 billion budget. The interest on that budget today is now amounting, by virtue of the high interest rate, which has been brought in by this administration, to some $8 billions every single year.
7.4.
Well, it was 7.4 to last maybe 6 months ago, but it's now up to 8, John, and the cost of living went up again this month, which, of course, you know this, that when Secretary Treasury Humphrey issued his new bonds program. He hasn't been able to sell them. People are cashing in their bonds at a rate which has got everyone alarmed. Nobody's going out to buy new bonds, which means the government's going to have to pay more money. higher interest rate to even finance itself. And the result is that all over this United States, and properly so, people are becoming greatly concerned about the fiscal solvency of the United States.
Well,
and that's why they're worried about these appropriation
programs. I think it's very proper that they should be, and it's really great that they are. But again, I point out that we're losing a little perspective. In these 4 years, past 4 years, this administration will have balanced the budget 3 times. It has accumulated some surpluses. It has reduced taxes. Now, I say it with all humility and deference, George, but the years before that, you had continual deficits, taxes, no tax reductions. Now this administration has brought this kind of fiscal stability, and I think that ought to be brought into perspective.
John, I just want to say this, that of course we are not in good shape fiscally speaking because we've begun to tamper with the interest rate. But talking about the tax cut, let's remember that it was the Democrats, I think, which, if you look at the number of votes, which more ardently and more regularly supported the president on that particular program than even his own party. And we have seen on many of these domestic issues, which today the Republicans like to claim credit for, that they were enacted under a Congress controlled by the Democrats. So I think for those particular matters, we can't say for the first time in our history the Republicans have been able to do that.
No, I don't, because these 4 years show the attainment of fiscal stability. And the thing that you just pointed out, that the Democrats did initiate a lot of these programs, and now this budget has to pay for
it. I'm sorry, gentlemen, I must interrupt. Our time is up. Yes. Thank you very much. We've heard today our guest in the American Forum, Senator George Smathers, Democrat of Florida, and Senator John Sherman Cooper, Republican of Kentucky.